A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to Fantasy Five-A-Side with me, Jim Campbell, on Football Ramble Daily. My guest today is a face and voice you'll know from BT Sports School, Premier League's FPL show, and of course, Jules and Andy on Football Ramble Daily. Welcome, Jules Breach.
Hiya, Jim. Thanks for having me. I'm quite excited about this, actually.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you on, Jules. It's it's going to be fun. So thanks for coming on. Appreciate that. How are you doing today?
I'm not too bad. I've got a cup of tea in hand and I'm ready to go through my Fantasy Five-A-Side team, which might throw up a few surprises. I'm sure there's a few that people aren't expecting.
Yeah, there's always one or two that I'm absolutely baffled by. So the more of that, the merrier, to be honest. I'm hoping for a team of that. So obviously, Jules, you're the player manager of this team, as is the brief that's been set out. So what sort of player do you see yourself as? Where are you going to be fitting in?
Well, I'm quite glad we're starting here, Jim, because we start with the worst and hopefully we gradually get better as we go through. Anyone that knows me knows I'm a terrible footballer. I'm awful.
It's hard football, isn't it? I'm a terrible footballer as well.
I'm not good. I've never been good. And to be honest, because I'm bad, I've never really tried to be good. I'm one of those people that if I can't do something, I'd rather just not try because I hate losing and I hate failing at anything. So, my experiences of actually playing football are very limited. So as player manager, I'm going to limit myself to the sidelines. I'll like to do all my talking from the bench and the technical area. And unless I absolutely have to play, then I'll have to come on. But
see, I like that straight away.
I'm hoping I don't have to.
Straight away that you're making the sacrifice for the team there. So I can see you sort of serious about, you know, these guys actually, you know, getting some wins and doing the best for the team, G-ing them up straight away. Because you're absolutely right. Like I almost feel bad for my teammates when I play five-a-side because I'm not a good footballer, not a natural athlete, shall we say. In fact, a friend of mine asked me to join his team a little while ago and I ended up playing. And he told me recently that his friends were angry at him afterwards for bringing in a ringer that was rubbish. And he said to me, well, you talk about football. So I figured that, you know, that would translate into you being able to see passes no one else can see. And it's like,
doesn't work like that.
No, that's profoundly not how it works.
Yeah, same as me. I mean, if you give me a tennis racket and we can bend the rules a bit and say, you know, you can use a racket to hit the ball, I might be all right. But anything with my feet, I'm terrible. I went to Brighton Pier recently with my nephew and the rest of the family. And, you know, they have those games where you can put the football down and you have to shoot it into the hole and you get teddy bears or whatever, get prizes for getting it into the hole as many times. Well, I was an embarrassment, to be honest.
And did you have that same pressure? Like, come on, George, you're the football one. You should
absolutely be
good at this.
Absolutely. Well, my brother is not really into football at all. My brother's like way more into his video games and all that kind of stuff. So he's never really been into sport. I've been the sporty one in the family. And he was like, come on then, Jules, you could do this. And I was like, no, you'll definitely be better at me than this, even though he doesn't watch any football. He's not interested in sport in the slightest, and he was way better than me. So yeah, when it comes to skills on the pitch, I have none of them. Just save the talking for me and leave that to me, because I can do that pretty well, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would like to remain solely as manager if that's possible, unless I have a point in the match where there's only one player left on the pitch and I absolutely have to go on. Only desperate times will I be stepping foot onto the pitch.
Fair enough. So who have you gone for in goal?
So my goalkeeper I have picked as the goalkeeper who got Brighton promoted to the Premier League in 2017, the one and only David Stockdale.
So do you support Brighton, Jules?
It's just, I do.
I don't think I've ever heard you mention it.
Never mentioned it before.
So obviously, yeah, David Stockdale, he's had a really really interesting career, hasn't he? And that must be something that really, with a goalkeeper in particular, when your team achieves something massive, that goalkeeper is like, it's just someone you adore so much, isn't it? That absolute bedrock of that success. And I guess Stockdale must feel like that to Brighton fans, right?
Definitely. I mean, that season that we went up, he was arguably our player of the season that year. And that was really hard to pick, because obviously in a promotion season, the majority of the team played well. But he was, for me, one of our standout players that year. And all the fans like absolutely loved him. He was immense. We had such a good defence that year. I think we had the best defence in the league the season that we got promoted from the Championship into the Premier League. And he was a big part of that. And he's just a Brighton legend. And I think he'll always go down as one of those players, and particularly one of our best goalkeepers of all time, because of that season in particular, but also the season before that, which when we came so close to going up that year as well. He's just a Brighton ledge, really. And that year that we went up, he was just instrumental in all of our good performances, and we were built around having a really good defence. So he was just ledge for us.
I feel like as well with David Stockdale, if you look at his career, I think he's made 12 loan moves. And he's a couple of times he's been at clubs a few times, I think Hull City and Wycombe Wanderers. And a lot of those loan moves were, in some cases, they were like 7 weeks long or something like that, like really, really short. So the guy just wants to play. And in five-a-side, that's ideal, because he's not going to be calling you up like 10 minutes before the game going, oh, Jules, I'm sorry. Oh, my boiler's broken. I can't, whatever, because he can't be bothered. He's going to be the first person there.
Yeah, I think the weird thing with David Stockdale is that he left Brighton in kind of strange circumstances, because, as I was saying, he was one of our players of the season in that year that we got promoted to the Premier League. So everyone expected him to kind of stay on and play for us in the Premier League. That was everyone's thoughts. And especially because he also had a bit of Premier League experience as well prior to playing for Brighton. I think he was at Fulham. Mm. So it was one of those things where I don't know what happened, whether, you know, the club didn't want him to stay, or whether he wasn't keen to stay anymore, or whether maybe he got an inkling that they were bringing in another goalkeeper and he wasn't going to be first choice. So like you were saying, Jim, he wanted to play football. He wanted to play every game. And maybe he just got an idea that wasn't going to happen in the Premier League for whatever reason. So yeah, I completely agree with you that he is that sort of dedicated character that wants to play every game. And I got to know him quite well over the years, because when I was working in local radio and also working for the club as well, it was before I was fortunate enough to be working in football full time. I actually used to work as a hostess at the Amex in some of the hospitality lounges. So I got to the players, sometimes the player of the match would come up into the lounge and we'd do the host in the lounge would do an interview with the player. So I got to know quite a few of the players over the time at the club, but also through my local radio station as well. We used to do a few interviews and stuff with them. And so I got to know David over the years, and we became friends on social media. And I remember messaging him that summer and saying to him, what's going on? Like, I'm hearing that you're not like signing a contract. And he said to me, you know, like, it just doesn't, that it's not like, it doesn't like feel right. He was saying like, you know, like, I don't feel like I'm going to play and all that stuff. So yeah. So then he ended up leaving, which was a real shame, because
yeah.
Because we all absolutely loved him.
It did seem as well, like for a player that had had a bit of a nomadic career with all those loan moves, that he'd found a home at Brighton, especially, yeah, you know, when he'd been promoted. And I don't know, maybe he just likes the drama, because I think he's been involved in so many different sort of promotions and relegations across those various loan moves. I know he played for Leicester on loan, and they were champions of League One during that season. Then he went back to Fulham, made his Premier League debut and was the reserve goalkeeper in the Europa League. Then he went on loan to Plymouth, who were relegated that year. He was then promoted with Hull and then with Brighton. Maybe thought, you know what, I think Brighton might stay up, so this isn't for me. I need a bit of drama.
Like, you know what, I want to go down again. I want to get relegated. it's a weird one. Like you say, he's a proper travelled footballer, isn't he? He's been here, there and everywhere, and also spent very short times at clubs. And I think right now he's gone, so he's actually at Birmingham, but I think even in his time at Birmingham in this spell, he's been on loan at a couple of different places. I think he's at Wickham at the moment, isn't he? So it is a strange one, but I think the reason why Brighton fans loved him so much and is in those kind of three or four years that he spent with us was because he came in when it was not a good time. You know, he came in when we were under Sammy Hupia, I think, was the first manager he played under. And
you were the perennial nearly men as well, weren't you, at that time?
Yeah, exactly. And then obviously Chris Hughton came in, and he came in when we were in the relegation zone, and David Stockdale was our goalkeeper at the time. So he's been through a lot with Brighton and with the Brighton fans. And I think to go through that journey and that kind of struggle of going from being in the relegation zone to then getting promoted to the Premier League, he's definitely a goalkeeper that won over a lot of the Brighton fans' hearts. And he just seems like an all-round good guy, actually.
Yeah,
as a person.
I've heard that as well. I know that Luke's met him before and has very good things to say about him. But as his manager, are you a bit concerned about this nomadic nature, that he might get a loan move to a different five-a-side team, or, you know, like, oh, I'm going to play golf for a bit now? Are you concerned about that, or do you trust him, especially after you've been hurt before in the past?
Well, I think I'd be most concerned about he's got a tracksuit company, I think.
Right.
I think that was one of the more recent things I saw, that he owns a tracksuit company. So that would be my biggest concern, is that maybe he'd want to go off and start selling
Filled
more tracksuits. Although the good thing with that is that our whole squad would get some free trackies, which,
that
you know,
is true.
And you've got to weigh up the costs of these things, Jim.
Take
so
it over the park
get
as well.
Free kit there.
Yeah, train over the park, trackies for goalposts.
Exactly.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
So we're going to move on to your first outfield player. And you've gone for one of the most high-profile players to ever play for Fleetwood Town. It's Steve McNulty.
Hero.
Absolute do you want to give a hero. Give a little bit of background on who Steve McNulty is, as he's not really a household name, is he? It's fair to say.
Well, to be fair, Steve McNulty is a bit of a cult hero footballing legend.
Very much.
The reason I've picked him is because, without giving away the rest of my team, I've gone fairly top heavy. So I've gone for one midfielder and two forwards. So I needed to go my one defender that I've picked. I had to make sure that he could manage the task on his own. And Steve McNulty, one little quick Google of him and you'll know exactly why I've picked him. He's an absolute unit.
It's incredible. But the thing
it's an amazing thing that he is a professional footballer, but he is the perfect example, Jim, of do not judge a book by its cover.
Oh my God, so much so. He's like a tank with a Rolls-Royce engine in it. Like you see a picture of Steve McNulty and he's got that combination of a stocky build, grey hair and black eyebrows that makes a man look like a badger, right? And you have a certain idea of what a lower league footballer that looks like that would play like. But all of his football is on the deck. It's really calm. He can do things that look flash, but are actually
back,
very...
Yeah.
Oh, so much so. So much so. But there's a real functionality to what he does that isn't... Functionality maybe sounds like I'm damning with faint praise, but like... He will very quickly get the ball from A to B. And if that means he needs to nutmeg someone or do a little quick turn and just like knock it along the deck, then he will do that. And he also looks a bit like Big Mad Andy, the unpredictable decorator from Peep Show. It's quite niche, but really does.
100%. The thing is, though, is for a guy of his size, and we're not saying he's, you know, ridiculously big, but for a footballer, he doesn't have the traditional build for, you know, your standard footballer that you see in the Football League. He moves so well for a player of his size. And the reason I discovered Steve McNulty, the legend, is because one of my friends is actually a Tranmere Rovers fan, diehard Tranmere Rovers fan. And
is it Mike Dean?
It's not Mike Dean. No, I'm not friends with Mike Dean. I wish I was.
Can you be? That's the thing. Does Mike Dean have friends or just people he tolerates? I guess we'll never know.
I might try and become friends with Mike Dean.
Please do.
I'd say I'm friends with Peter Walton because of the work that we do on BT Sport together. So I wonder whether Peter could introduce me to Mike Dean and you never know. One day.
Yeah. It's the first.
One day we can get him on the ramble.
First Fantasy Five-a-side with homework. So off you go.
Exactly. But yeah, my mate is a Tranmere fan. And a few years ago, he said to me, I want to get a big group of us together to go to the playoff final. So it was the year when they played Forest Green at Wembley in the final.
Mm. And which team was this, sorry? Oh, Tranmere, of course.
Tranmere, yeah, Tranmere. So it was when Tranmere played Forest Green in the National League playoff final. So for a place in the Football League. So he got about, I think there was about 20 of us that ended up going, all supporters of different clubs, but his dad actually lives in Spain and his dad flew over from Spain for it. And so there was a big gang of us. We all went along to Wembley, had an absolutely brilliant day out. It was gorgeous sunshine, obviously like end of May sort of time. And he was just absolutely brilliant. Anyway, so we went to the playoff final and my mate said to me, watch out for big Steve McNulty. And I'm like, who's this Steve McNulty guy? And when he walked out onto the pitch, I thought, are you serious? Yeah. This guy's a footballer. Like, this is amazing. And after that day, I was just so intrigued to find out more about him. So I ended up kind of looking into his career a bit, and he's got an incredible story because he actually signed for Liverpool's youth academy when he was younger, and he played through the youth academy at Liverpool. So he had an incredibly promising career from a young age, but he sort of just fell out of love with football and ended up going back to, I think he was like a furniture deliverer for a few years and he stopped playing football for a while because he just fell out of love with
it. It's amazing that margin, isn't it? That you can go from Liverpool's youth side, which is obviously a huge deal, to just a normal job at that really crucial time.
And also just to fall out of love with football. I find that quite incredible to understand for a job that's
allowed,
so dedicated. But also for a job that takes so much dedication fitness wise and everything about it, you know, leaving your family behind, all of those kind of things that we kind of forget sometimes, to then fall out of love with it, go back to doing something completely normal, and then deciding a couple of years later, do you know what? I want to get back into football now. And that's what happened. I think he went to Barrow first, and then he started working his way up, met Mickey Mellon, and then he started playing for him at Tranmere, and then the rest is history. And now he's just become a bit of a legend. And another one of my mates is a big Luton fan. It's my best friend's husband, and he's been following Luton since he was a kid. And he has told me some amazing stories about McNulty at Luton. He said that, you know, they'd be in the pub beforehand and the away supporters would be saying, like, have you seen the geezer that plays at the back for Luton? Like, he looks like a Sunday league player and all this kind of stuff. Like, and that is the truth, is that if you saw him, that is what you would think. But actually, when you see him on the pitch, he's quite an impressive footballer.
He really, really is. I obviously didn't know a huge amount about Steve McNulty beforehand. So you bringing him to this table is how I've learned this lesson myself. But honestly, if you're listening, give him a Google. He plays the ball on the deck so well. He's a really silky, calm player. And he does not look like that's what you're going to get from him at
no,
first glance.
No,
it's great.
Proper,
and more power to him.
He's a leader as well, Jim, isn't he? Captained every club that he's been to pretty much.
I think he's been promoted 6 times with 4
it's
clubs.
Amazing.
Which
it's
is
amazing.
Incredible.
And he's still going now. He's 36 and he's still going. He's not at Tranmere anymore. He's dropped down into, I think, National League North or something like that. So he's not quite playing in the Football League anymore, but what a guy. What a guy.
What a
and
guy,
I think
indeed.
He'll do a job for me at the back, Jim.
He really will.
I put my faith in him. He'll stop anything.
I think so. So, I mean, obviously going for a one-man defence is quite a risky move. Obviously, Steve McNulty's probably the man for that in this situation, but you're going to need some quality in midfield ahead of him. So who have you gone for as your solo midfielder?
Mate, this is a good one. This is no cult hero. This is one of the best footballers to ever grace the earth. Steven Gerrard.
Stevie G. I'm surprised
Stevie
he's not come
G.
up before, to be honest.
Have you seen him in anyone else's team yet?
No, not yet.
What?
Yeah, I know. I'm surprised. But I mean, he seems an obvious one for me because there are many tropes of the five-a-side player, the typical player. And one of those is the guy that tries to do everything himself. And you might as well pick someone who could actually do that if
literally
you're going to fill that
anything.
Role.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't even know where to start or what to say about him, but he's my favourite footballer of all time. He's just an absolute legend of the game. And he's a player, really, that made me discover football properly.
Wow. Do you remember the first moment that made that happen?
Yeah. So it's actually quite a funny story. So the reason I got into football was through my dad. My dad's a Middlesbrough fan and my dad is a proper borough boy, working class through and through. You know, like all he knew as a kid was just watching football. And unfortunately, my dad didn't make me a Middlesbrough fan. Or actually, should I say fortunately?
I should probably say fortunately.
but my dad always watched football in the house and I was always into tennis. So I actually played tennis when I was growing up. And so I was always really sporty and liked to sit and watch any sport on telly. And dad was obviously a massive Borough fan, so used to watch a lot of football. And one day my dad was watching a game and he said to me, oh, I've got the same. And I liked it. I sat there and watched football with my dad, but I was never like a proper, like properly engrossed with football. And this one day my dad said to me, oh, there's a player that has the same name as me. And I said, oh, who's that? And he went, that one there in the middle of the park, Steven Gerrard. I was like, what? And my dad's name is actually Steven Gerrard as well.
Wow.
So I know. So that was basically how I got introduced to Steven Gerrard. It's my dad's middle name. So my dad's first name is Steven. Dad's middle name is Gerrard. So ever since that day, I was like, oh, who's this Steven Gerrard guy? So anytime Liverpool were playing, my dad would say, oh, look, I'm on the telly again. And like, it kind of became a little bit of a joke that Steven Gerrard was my dad. And every time he'd play, I'd watch him. And obviously, because he was an incredibly gifted footballer, I just started watching him and following him and following Liverpool a bit. And it wasn't until really the 2005 Champions League final, we sat there and we watched that Champions League final together. And that was the match really that made me properly fall in love with football. After that game, which was just the most incredible football match ever, I think.
It really was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think younger listeners who maybe have hazy memories of it, I feel for you missing that. Mm. Did you watch it at home, did you say? Because it's one of those things I remember where I was and who I was with.
Yeah. Yeah, we were watching it at home, and that just everything about that, it was just gripping. So gripping and so emotional. And, you know, my dad's not a Liverpool fan, but we were just sat there and we were both just like, this is absolutely mental. And after that, I started to follow football a lot more closely because there was something about that game that just kind of captivated me. And
oh, totally.
I've just got a whole lot of love for that entire Liverpool team because of the nostalgia of that very day watching that football match and the kind of feelings that it gave me and the goosebumps that it gave me watching it.
I'm feeling amazing. It now, even remembering it, because I think this is probably why a lot of people get into football over summer tournaments, because you get games like that quite a lot, even if England go out in glorious failure, as they've done so many times, because you get bitten by how dramatic it feels and you feel like, you know what, the next time this happens, I want to have earned it. I want to know everything about these guys. I want to know who these players are, and I want to know every single thing. And the Liverpool game was like that. I remember, unless you support Everton or Man United, I think everybody was supporting Liverpool that night. However, you know, whatever opinion you might have of them for whatever reason otherwise. I remember watching it with a friend of mine at a pub in Bank, and a mutual friend of ours texted us at half time to say, and he supports Spurs, the most partisan Spurs fan you'll ever meet. And he just said, Liverpool are going to win. And we were like,
really?
Maybe they are, but there was this sense of it. And it was something else.
It was just an incredible game. And I remember just all the feelings watching that and just thinking, this is why I want to now follow this amazing sport. And that was the game that really made me fall in love with football and just make me want to watch it every single week in the hope that I get to see more moments like that. And it was obviously because Steven Gerrard was that player that made me love football in the first place. And then he was involved in the most incredible game. It just made me think, oh, this guy, like, he's just amazing. He's so gifted and what he can do for the team. And then obviously he played for England as well. So then as an England fan, he was then my favorite England player as well. So through the years, he's just been that footballer that's kind of been a constant in my life, if that makes sense.
I love the way he could turn a game as well. The FA Cup final against West Ham, I remember watching it with friends of mine who all support West Ham. And even when, like, he scored that late goal, they were all just like, I mean, what can you do about Steven Gerrard when he's in this kind of mood? Like,
There's something about a player that can score a goal from long range. I don't care what team you support, you can hate the team, you can hate the player, but if they score from long range, there's something about it that just makes any fan of any club just go, oh yes, that is amazing. And Steven Gerrard had that ability to just score from all sorts of areas on the pitch and hit the ball with so much power, and they're the sort of things that excite fans, and he was one of the players that could get fans excited, and I just love him. I just think he's unreal.
I believe one of the best goals he scored might have been against Middlesbrough. So it's a half volley that curled into the top corner in a really satisfying way. That must have been a funny one for your dad.
But, I'll have to ask my dad about that one. I can't remember that.
Yeah. So you've got Stevie G tearing up the middle of the park, trying to do everything himself, probably succeeding, let's be honest. Yeah. So who have you got in front of him?
All right. Well, I've gone for two strikers.
Bold.
And both getting on a bit now as well. But I've got faith in them. In fact, all of my team are pretty old, apart from Stocko and goal. Yeah. But I've gone for two strikers, Glenn Murray and Michael Bridges.
Michael, I said earlier, there's always someone that comes up. Michael Bridges was that one in this occasion. Let's start with Glenn Murray, though. No, I mean, it's not as if I have a list of players written down that I am expecting, but if I did have, Michael Bridges would absolutely not be on it.
No.
But before we get to him, should we start with Glenn Murray? Obviously, he's a bit of a cult hero at Brighton.
Of course. My favourite Albion player of all time. He's the one. Brighton legend, obviously. He's played for us on a couple of different occasions. We won't talk about that little move away that he went to Palace because that disturbed a lot of fans.
I really want to ask you about that, though. So I'm just going to make you talk about it, if that's okay. Because he ran down his contract to join Palace, then went on to score loads of goals against Brighton for Palace.
Yeah.
And then obviously did the same for Brighton against Palace later on.
Great.
Like, how that as a fan? That must have been such a strange thing to have to get behind him again. And was it sort of I don't know, was it one of those things where it's like, oh, it all turned out for the best in the end? Or
now we can say that. But I remember at the time, because when he came back to Brighton in it for his second spell, he first joined on loan. And I remember thinking, what? Like, what are we doing? Why is he coming back here? Like, what's going on there? But obviously, we all know his talent and we all know what a prolific goal scorer he can be. So, and we needed someone. We really needed another goal scorer at the time. So there were a lot of questions being asked. A lot of fans were a bit baffled. But I think ultimately, it's kind of like, well, he's chose to come back to us. And if he's going to score goals for us, then we'll take him back. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah, of course.
I think it definitely took a while. But like anything in football, the minute they score a goal for you, that's it. You forget about the past. You forget what happened at Palace. You forget who else he played for. And you just think, well, he's here now. He's playing for us. He's going to bang in the goals. So let's forget what happened. And I think that if you asked any Brighton fan now, they'd say all of that time at Palace is forgotten. And if anything, it kind of just makes for a funny story.
It does. Does it make it a little bit better? Because when he came back to Brighton, he scored the winner to knock Palace out of the FA Cup and then scored his 100th Brighton League goal in a 2-1 win over Palace at Selhurst Park. So, I mean, is that all the sweeter because he played for Palace?
100%. 100%. The only thing is, I'd love to see him properly celebrate and properly go for it and just be like, come on. But I think a lot of players are a little bit more respectful, aren't they? They don't like to be like that against their old clubs. But, you know, it does make it sweeter. It does. He's the sort of player that he can score in any game. And that's why we love him. And that's why he's in the team.
Murray, he's really worked his way to the top, hasn't he? Started started right at the bottom of the pyramid. He played in America for a bit as well. No wonder he's still going at 36 years old. I'd want to savour it as well if I'd gone up to that. If I'd worked all the way up to the Premier League. Because even in the Championship, there were questions not just over could he cut it in the Premier League, making the transition from the Championship, but you know, his age, would the pace of it and the rigours of it be too much? But apparently not, and that is an excellent thing. And I think as well, in this team, realistically, with the team you've got, it's all a foil for Stevie G, isn't it? is what I'm saying. And obviously Glenn Murray's going to be a poacher, he's going to get you goals, but his hold up play is important as well.
Absolutely.
And for Gerrard bombing on behind, I think you've got a nice foil there.
Yeah, he could be. He's our target man in the team, and I think that you need that. You need that target man that you can, you know, get the ball up to, but also someone that can hold the ball up, like you say, for the second striker in Michael Bridges. And I think that Glenn is just he's a different type of striker, isn't he? And I think that old fashioned target man is now becoming fashionable again. So I quite like having Glenn in my five-a-side. He's 36, but it's fine. He's proven.
He's in good shape.
Yeah, he's in good shape. And in terms of reality, rather than my five-a-side team, I want to see him keep on scoring for Brighton because I want him to get the all-time record. I think he's 12 off the all-time top scorer for Brighton now. So let's hope he surpasses it. But he's going to need another season, isn't he? So let's hope we stay up this year.
Indeed.
And he can get there.
So let's move on to Michael Bridges. I would just tell me everything about why you've chosen Michael Bridges. I'm fascinated.
So as you can tell with the most of my team, I've gone heart over head. I've not picked a team full of excellent players at the top of the game, should I say. I've mainly picked players who I like for nostalgic reasons. And Michael Bridges is one of those. Obviously he was a brilliant striker in his day and had a lot of promise as a young English player. That's not why I've picked him. I've picked him because we're really good mates.
Right.
We worked together in Australia on the Men's World Cup 2018. And he's just a top bloke. And I just thought, I want to put him in my team because I think he'd be a right laugh. He'd boost morale. And also he can score a decent goal as long as he doesn't get injured.
Which
has been his biggest issue.
I mean, we're going to give him the benefit of the doubt, given that none of this is actually real. So hypothetically, in this situation, he's in good shape. He's in good shape.
Very good shape for a 41-year-old. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's another journeyman. And I know there's an outside reason for you picking him, but there's a lot of journeymen in your team. Is there any particular reason for that, do you think?
coincidence, I think. Yeah. I didn't plan that at all, Jim. Oh, I think I went through and thought, well, who have I got good stories about? Who can I pick that yeah. I can tell a good story about? Yeah, no, to be fair, Bridgie has played for a lot of clubs. In fact, it's a bit of a reunion as well with Glenn Murray because they played together at Carlisle.
Right.
Yeah. So Glenn Murray and Michael Bridges played together for a while at Carlisle. And I think it was when Glenn was quite a bit younger. But when Glenn came into the team at Carlisle, Bridgie was already there. And apparently Glenn Murray used to make coffees for Michael Bridges.
Wow.
What a story that is.
I can't imagine like young players do that anymore. I mean, no. You know, I have no insight into that, but so maybe they do. But
I also don't reckon Glenn Murray makes a good cup of tea or coffee. I don't know why.
Shots fired.
I don't think he makes a good cup of tea. I don't know why.
What type of cup of tea do you think he makes then?
I reckon he's just a quick, you know, tea bag in the mug. Water in, quick little stir, takes tea bag out, puts the milk in. Whereas I reckon Michael Bridges leaves a tea bag in for a good 3 minutes. What on earth am I talking about? To be fair, I do know that Bridgie does make a good cup of tea because he made me quite a few when we worked together.
Yeah.
He's a proper Geordie, isn't he? So he knows how to make a good brew.
Is there not an argument that he's learned everything he knows about tea from Glenn Murray, if Glenn Murray used to make it for him?
True. That is true.
It could go the other way. He could be so horrified by that style of tea that he's had to sort of go for his own type. I personally, I'm not a fan of someone leaving the bag in or it being too milky. Other than that, I'm kind of non-fussed about.
Really?
You know, some people get really angry about tea being made in a certain way. The same people that pretend they get angry about pineapple on pizza. I don't, tea's good, isn't it?
I like pineapple on pizza, but I am one of those people that gets angry about a rubbish cup of tea.
Okay, so what's the worst type?
Got to be a proper brew. I hate like a weak cup of tea.
The kind of cup of tea that you're assuming Glenn Murray makes, like just slightly in.
And I've got absolutely no reason to think that because he's never made me a cup of tea. I have worked with Glenn a couple of times. He came into BT Sport a couple of times and he's absolutely lovely. So I feel really bad about dissing his tea making ability. But
maybe, you know, another bit of homework. See if you can sit down with Mike Dean over a cup of tea made by Glenn Murray.
Yeah, that would be great. Imagine. But no. Glenn can hopefully prove me wrong one day and make me a decent cup of tea. We'll see.
Yeah. Oh, actually, there's something else I wanted to say about Glenn Murray. He scored one of the goals that helped Brighton beat Liverpool 3-1 at Anfield in Steven Gerrard's final game. So are you worried there might be a little bit of tension there, or are they both professionals and would they overcome it?
I think they'd overcome it. I think with the amount of clubs, as you say, that Glenn Murray and Michael Bridges and all the rest of my team have played for, barring Steven Gerrard, I think they're quite used to seeing older opponents that they've beat or, you know, come across in their time. I think they'll be fine. Plus, Steven Gerrard's a legend. Glenn Murray will be absolutely fine playing with him. I don't think there'll be any problem there whatsoever.
So with Michael Bridges, it's an interesting one because he had that season where he scored 19 goals for Leeds and he really did look like he was going to be something special. But then injury just curtailed his career, really, didn't it? He is unfortunately one of those players where we never got to see what he could have done if he'd had a proper run of fitness. And it's a real shame. But he is one of those players that is kind of looked back on fondly despite that, you know.
Definitely. And strangely enough, well, I think one of the only players that's played for both Newcastle and Sunderland.
He's also played for both Newcastle United and Newcastle Jets. I don't know if that counts for something, but I think it should.
And do you know what? He actually lives in Newcastle in Australia.
Well,
so we moved from Newcastle in England to Newcastle in Australia. I remember when I met him and I said to him, because we were actually where we were put up for the World Cup filming in Oz, we were actually all staying in Bondi and it was hilarious. So it was me, Mark Schwarzer and Michael Bridges, basically all had little apartments in this little block on Bondi Beach. And it all sounds a lot more glamorous than it was. We were basically on
and
night
slightly
shift.
Surreal.
So surreal.
It sounds like the start of a dream.
It was the weirdest experience, mainly not because I was in the same block of flats as them two, but because I didn't actually see any daylight for about 6 weeks.
And this was in Australia as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Famed for its daylight.
I remember when I got the gig and I was told, we're going to fly you out to Australia. You get to stay on Bondi Beach for 6 weeks and you'll be presenting the World Cup. I thought, this is the absolute dream. Got out there and then quickly realised that obviously I was going to be hosting the matches.
Mm.
So I'd be working on Russian time zone from Sydney. And I thought, what the hell have I got myself into here? And so, yeah, I basically, my call time was midnight every night. So I'd get to the studio for midnight and I was covering the games that kicked off at 2 a.m. and 4 a.m. So it was hard work. And Michael Bridges was basically my main pundit for it. So we spent the whole of that time together. And it was, it was a little bit surreal and a bit crazy. But I remember when we first met and I said to him, where do your family live? Where's home? And he said, I actually live in Newcastle. And I was like, what? I was like, how do you? And I didn't even get it because I didn't know there was a Newcastle in Australia. And he went, no, Newcastle, it's like about an hour away from here. And I was like, what the bloody hell?
Yeah.
It's mad. And his wife, Kate, is actually a Geordie as well. She's proper Geordie. And like they haven't lost their accent at all. And they've been living in Australia now for about 12 years, I think.
Oh.
But yeah, they're just like just the nicest, most down to earth, amazing people. And we had such a laugh working together. Definitely couldn't have got through all those night shifts without Bridgie. And he's like a big kid still. You hear about all these stories of like footballers when they've retired and you think, oh, I wonder what they're doing now, what are they up to? A lot of them haven't changed a lot from their playing days. And I think Bridgie is one of those. He's like,
I imagine it's a bubble.
Kid. He's just a big kid still. There was one of the rest days of the tournament where you live in this kind of tournament bubble throughout a World Cup or a Euros or whatever tournament that you work on, where everyone's sort of, you just live literally for the matches every single day and you don't really get a break. And then the minute you get one of the rest days, it's like, yes, I can like finally relax.
Mm.
And we got to the first rest day of the tournament and we thought, right, let's all get pissed because we've been working so hard for this first 3 weeks without a break. Let's all go get drunk. So we had a few drinks and I was absolutely knackered. So I ended up going to bed early and Bridgie stayed out with one of the other the pundits that was working with us. And I just remember getting a knock on my room door and I put late in inverted commas because it was actually about midday, but like, because we'd only finished work at sort of 7 a.m. It was, that's late, you know?
Yeah.
So I'd already gone to sleep and I'm thinking, who the hell is this knocking on my door? I opened the door and it was Bridgie and the other pundit, the other Aussie guy who was working with us. And they were like, come out for another drink. And I was like, go away. I was literally like, I hate you guys. And so close the door. But that's what he's like. He's just a big kid still. And he was just such a laugh to work with. So well, I think nice he hear. Would, he'd boost the morale of my five-a-side team and we'd have a right laugh. So
that's great. Yeah. So moving away from lovely Michael Bridges, you've got one pick left. And, as is the score on the show, your substitute alongside you cannot be a professional footballer. So who have you gone for as your last pick?
I have gone for Shona Paul. Bada bang bang.
This is right up there with my favourite pick for this. Because there are so many things I love about this, because Sean Paul might as well be called featuring Sean Paul, just because he's on so many things. And like, what better
person? Hey, give him more credit than that, Jim.
Hey, come on. He's a living legend, but he just pops up everywhere. And I can't think of a more appropriate substitute, because it's like Jules Breach's five-a-side team featuring Sean Paul, who's just going to pop up here and there.
That's so true. I didn't think of it like that, but now you put it that way, absolutely. He'd provide the soundtrack for the team. We'd have
like a hype man running the whole time.
Constant big tunes from the sidelines.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what more could you... Who wouldn't want Sean Paul in their five-a-side team?
It's an amazing cheerleader. Like, he would keep morale so, so high. And I think you'd be energized by him. I'd like to have Sean Paul just like approving of me in general in life. And I think that's what you'd be getting from him, you know. That would give you a real boost.
I have a genuine Sean Paul story for you.
Tell me everything.
Right. So I don't know if you know this, Jim. I don't know if we've ever spoken about this at Ramble HQ when we've come across each other. But I actually grew up in Jamaica and my family still live out there. And as a kid, I used to play tennis. And all I did basically was play tennis, play in tennis tournaments. My whole life revolved around tennis. And when I was about, I must have been maybe about 10 or 11, I played in a very junior crappy tennis tournament at my local club, and I won. And they said, "Oh, we've got a local celebrity that's going to, you know, give out the tennis trophies and the medals today."
Here we go.
It was Sean Paul.
Amazing.
So Sean Paul gave me my first ever tennis trophy when I won this little tennis tournament.
Again, just popping up. It's what he does.
Everywhere. He's everywhere.
Featuring
Sean Paul. Tennis featuring Sean Paul. Literally. So that was one of the first celebrities I ever met as a kid.
That's pretty brilliant.
It's pretty impressive, isn't it? So Sean Paul gave me my first ever tennis trophy. After that, he was obviously a celebrity in Jamaica way before he became an international hero. I obviously grew up then listening to his music out in Jamaica. And then when I moved back to England, it was one of the like weird things where his music then started to come over to the UK, and I felt like it was following me. And I was like, oh, Sean Paul, my
it's
life.
The guy that gave me the tennis trophy.
Sean Paul. Yeah, exactly that. So, he's been a constant in my life ever since I was a kid. And so there's no way I could have a five-a-side team without him.
Yeah. You know what? I think he'd be pretty handy as well, because doing a bit of research on Sean Paul, I mean, not that I don't have a general encyclopedic knowledge of Sean Paul, who doesn't? But I thought I'd just, you know, dust off the annals of Sean Paul's life.
You're a professional, Jim.
Well, exactly. He played for the Jamaican water polo team between the ages of 13 and 21. So he's got a bit of athletic prowess. I think he stopped playing when his music career started to take off and he had to sort of make a decision. So, you know, he's got some experience of sport. I think he'd do a job. Again, he's in his 40s now, but he's Sean Paul, isn't he? So I think it's sort of ageless.
I didn't know about the what was it, water polo, did you say?
Yeah. How Jamaican random. Water polo team. It sounds like a sort
Jamaica
of
had
sequel
a water
to Cool Runnings.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I obviously didn't know about that, but I was more thinking about his on stage stamina. Now, as a musician, all of those moves he's got to do on stage, you've got to be quite fit to be able to sing and pull off those dance moves at the same time. I know he only really moves his legs back and forth a little bit, but still.
Isn't that what football is?
Well, yeah, exactly.
Moving your legs back and forth a bit.
So I reckon he'd be quite fit. And also, he's just appeared on Love Island, hasn't he? So he clearly.
Is he really? I missed that.
Yeah, he was on the winter episode of Love Island that not as many people watched. And he did a random performance in the villa. So he's clearly looking for work. So I feel like being my five-a-side cheerleader slash hype man slash substitute, because I'm never going to play.
Yeah.
I think he'd take this opportunity with both hands.
And also, if you win the tournament, he can present you another award. Be a nice bookend.
Exactly. It's perfect. It all comes together. I didn't even realize it would come together this well, but it has.
So with that in mind, obviously, the post-match drink is a really important part of the five-a-side experience. And I'm fascinated about, you know, what Steve McNulty and Sean Paul are going to talk about. But have you got a venue in mind? Obviously, Sean's in charge of that, I would assume. You
for
follow
the after
his
party.
Lead, maybe. Yeah.
Oh, well, I'm gonna say that based on and judging by the age and fitness levels of the majority of my team, I'm going to say that they ain't going to be bang up for anything hardcore. I think most of them are, after a bit of five-a-side, they're ready to just chill out.
Mm.
So I'm going to say we go to a traditional Jamaican jerk center.
Nice.
And we just all sit there with a red stripe in hand. I'll have a rum punch because I'm not a fan of beer. And we'll sit there, we'll drink rum, we'll drink red stripe, and we'll just chill out and relax and have some jerk chicken. And that's our after party. We all just need a chill after our five-a-side. We're not fit anymore.
We're not
ready to be kicking on
and
partying all night.
You've been working hard on the pitch.
Yeah.
Apart from you. You've been stood at the
apart
side.
From me.
But you know,
I've been doing
your
nothing. I've been working on my voice. That's about it. So a bit of liquid, nice bit of rum punch will sort me out. Right treat.
Lovely. Well, thanks very much for coming on, Jules. That's an excellent addition to the Fantasy Five Aside canon.
Was this a waste of time, Jim?
No, not at all. Not at all. It was great. I think your team are going to do all right as well. I think they'll surprise a few people. So, yeah, Jules, thank you very much for coming onto the show. You can hear Jules on Jules and Andy on Football Ramble Daily on Tuesdays, and obviously catch her on BT Sport and all over the place. You're everywhere, aren't you? So
thanks, Jim. Thanks for having me. It's been a real laugh.
Thanks for coming on. Cheers, Jules.
Cheers,
and
mate.
See you later, everyone.
Bye.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
You know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Listen to this Acast show ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.